So they say confession is good for the soul.
Mm.
So I want to start with a thanks to all our listeners. Because today, collectively, they bought me 4 new pairs of socks.
Really? How did that happen?
Well, what happened was, I was perusing. I needed some new socks. I like blue socks because it matches other stuff. Not a fan of the grey sock. Don't know about you.
No, not the grey sock. And the beige sock, even worse, because it makes it look like you're not actually wearing a sock.
No, well, that's just ridiculous. Beige anything is ridiculous in my book. Anyway, the point is this. I eventually found some. They look good. And as you get to the end, you know, you pay with a credit card if you're smart and everything, but there was an option to pay with PayPal. Don't normally pay PayPal, but I thought if you hit PayPal, you don't have to fill in all your address because PayPal already has it.
Oh, I think I know what's happening.
You see where this is going, don't you? So I dutifully filled it in, hit the pay, thought no more about it. And then I saw in my mid-faith crisis email folder on my email machine that... it had come from mid-faith crisis. So thanks, everyone. I've got 4 lovely new pairs of blue socks. I really appreciate it.
I'm just amazed we've got enough in there to buy you some socks.
Those listeners are very generous.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 249 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there is Mr. Sock, Joe Davis.
Hello.
249.
It feels like we should do something special next week for our quarter of a millennia, or whatever it is. It's not that, is it?
Gosh.
250, well, that's a milestone, isn't it, surely?
Yes, it is a quarter of a millennia, maybe 1,000, yeah. Ooh. Well, I mean, you know, not 1,000 years, we won't be doing it for that long.
No, exactly.
You know, it might seem that long when you're listening to it, I admit, but, you know. Part of me is saying, yes, we should do something special for the 250th edition. And the other part of me is saying, oh, that would require preparation. And
exactly.
We just don't seem to be able to manage that very much at the moment.
It's not so good, is it? Here, we've got a church notice.
Go on, then.
So, the lovely Chris Scott, author of Goodbye to God and the Jesus Myth, and we interviewed him on the podcast a little while back, he has lovingly agreed to do an event here in Worthing. So I know this is only really for local listeners, but if you're in the South and you would like to put the 8th of October in your diaries for just a morning with Chris Scott. And I'm going to be interviewing him and people can, you know, ask questions of him. But Chris has written these amazing books and he's really helped me actually sort of formulate some stuff. And I think it'd be a good morning. So if you want to come along, tickets are on a donation basis, as is so often the way. If you can afford it, we're suggesting a donation. If you can't afford it, come along anyway. Just please book a place. That'd be great. And I'll put it on our Facebook page. And if you're kind, you might put it in the notes.
I'll put it on the website. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So that is the 8th of October this year, 10:30 till about 1. And that's going to be at Worthing Baptist Church. Oh, getting in touch with my Baptist roots.
Great. Oh, wow. We could, if you want to book in a quick baptism, he'll be there.
Absolutely.
Get that pool filled. So anyway, apart from that, how are you?
Yeah, well, good. I've been to the cinema twice, but I didn't do the Barbenheimer,
that's the Oppenheimer-Barbie duet.
That's the duet. I did the Mission Impossible and Barbie combo. Mission Barbie, as I like to call it. Which does sound like a Billy Graham crusade, doesn't it? But both films, immensely enjoyable for different reasons. Mission Impossible was a really, really good thrill. You know, sit on the edge of your seat, tense for an hour and a half. If you think that's fun, I highly recommend it. And Barbie was just, what can you say about Barbie? Have you seen it? Are you going to see it?
I haven't seen it. I doubt I will see it in the cinema. I mean, I'm not against seeing it because I think it looks quite fun, really. And may I say, you're wearing a very Barbie pink
thank you.
T-shirt today.
I am, yeah. I know, in honour.
Yeah.
I do like a bit of pink, as you know. But
that is where the similarity ends.
Yeah. But it was a really interesting film. And it as a film, it has caused much discussion in my family, particularly among the women. So that's been fascinating to see. I think they enjoyed it, but with reservations about some of it. Okay. And it really interesting. And I saw it about an hour after I had interviewed Lacey for the podcast, amongst other things, about patriarchy. So it was an evening of unpicking patriarchy one way or another. But yeah, very interesting, very loud messages coming from that film.
I do have
a question about it, which I'd like to talk to you about one of these days.
Oh, okay.
Which is, well, I see coming from all over the place, from memes on social media, from films that are being made. There's this big, loud message, and it's lovely. It's about loving yourself, accepting yourself as you are, not comparing yourself to other people, being who you're truly meant to be, being authentic. You know, no one could disagree with it. But my question is, how? None of these things tell you how. They just say you should love yourself, or you should accept yourself for who you are. You should be who you really are, and don't be anyone else. Be the real you. Great. How? How do you make that shift from sort of self-loathing, if you do self-loathe, you know, to being fully content to be who you are with all your foibles and strengths and weaknesses? And I suppose that's where I think about spiritual formation and just how helpful understanding that and Renovare has been in my own life, because I feel like that was the first time I really encountered what I suppose Christians would call discipleship, that actually it is possible to move from being impatient to being patient, or being angry to being less angry, or to, you know, they actually give you steps. Whereas I feel like there's this loud message in culture at the moment without giving you much help as to how to do it.
Well, and also it omits the presence of a being who loves you.
Yes.
You know, in other words, what enables us to love ourselves is the idea that we are loved.
That's a good foundation.
Cherished.
Yeah.
And so I think, I'm not saying it's impossible by any means without that, but I'm just saying that I think that's part of the spiritual formation view of it, is that you have to start with in our case, God's view of us. And that gives you a foundation to start with. Because if you really hate yourself, I think it's very hard to suddenly turn around and go, well, actually, you know, I'm going to love myself now.
Yeah, now I'll love myself for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not going to...
Thanks, Barbie.
exactly.
So it doesn't quite work.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, we should talk about that. I mean, I think we are going to talk a little bit about authenticity in this podcast. But, you know, what I've enjoyed about the Barbie and the Oppenheimer thing are the sort of crossover bits. Have you seen that? So, you know, that Oppenheimer quote, he says, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
All right.
And I've seen it up put up in Barbie font. In
pink. Have you? That's great. So, yeah. So anyway.
That's really good.
Yeah, no, that is good. And I'll tell you what, I've been enjoying watching the programme Earth. I don't know whether you come across that, presented by Chris Packham. I mean, you could have done the voiceover, to be fair, but...
Do you know, that now I've been thinking about this, because, look, I have no problem. People say you sound like Chris Packham, or you sound like Jules Holland, or whatever they say to me. It's baffling to me. And I said to Claire the other night, I said, do I sound like him? And she said, no, I don't think so. But, you know, it's kind of like, so it's really odd, isn't it? Because you never know. I'm not critiquing anybody. Choose what you sound. But you never know what you sound like to other people. It's just really odd. To me, it sounds nothing like like Chris Packham.
I hate my voice. I can't bear to hear me.
Yeah.
It's fine. It sounds all right now I'm talking to you, but if I hear it on the podcast, it's dreadful.
Yeah. Well, no, well, I can't bear to hear you either, but that's a different, you know, that's not because of your voice itself. It?
Anyway, the point is Earth is an extraordinary series. It is great. In a strange way, it gives you a little bit of confidence in the Earth, because, you know, I get a bit doom and gloomy sometimes when I think about climate change and everything. And you realise actually the world has been through really terrible things before, and it survives. I mean, 96% of life admittedly gets wiped out. Sharks tend to survive well.
Oh, do they?
In these mass extinction events. Yeah, but humans, I suspect, not so well in the next one.
Okay.
And where does that, you know, what does that mean for theology? What's your theology of mass extinctions and of humanity being wiped out? But Earth going on and producing lovely new life. You know, what does... Just a thought.
It's a very interesting thought, because I actually don't think there is one.
No, you know? I don't think anyone's thought of one yet.
Well, I mean, our theology is bound up with our humanity. So if our humanity is not around, it won't have a theology, will it?
I suppose it won't. No, good point.
I suppose there is all the questions about end times and all those kinds of things. Anyway,
exactly.
You know,
but let's finish on a bit of good news. And I don't mean to boast. I don't mean to, because that's obnoxious. No one likes that.
No, it's not like us.
No, no.
We are humble.
We are humble. But I did notice, and I know these things shouldn't matter, but we have climbed to the 97th most popular Christian podcast in Cyprus. I mean, I'm humbled.
Well, do you know, I feel like retiring. I feel like, are we going to beat that?
We've made it into the top 100.
Is it possible to get to the 96th?
No. No. So that's good news. So on the whole, it's been a positive week.
I don't understand these analytics. So listener, we get through, you know, we get these sort of analytics through from some kind of service that we're chartable that we're part of. And they tell you where you listen to and all this kind of stuff. I, you know, baffled as to why they choose that particular one to tell us. But anyway, hello in Cyprus, I suppose, is the thing. If you're listening, we must have listeners in Cyprus. So hello in Cyprus.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we hope the fires don't burn there like they have on neighbouring places. So God bless you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, particularly, I think we should say to any of our listeners who are, you know, suffering unbearable heat or in fear of fire or all that kind of stuff, wherever you are around the world, our thoughts are with you.
Yes, indeed, they are. And how about you, dear boy? Sorry, how are you? Come on.
Yeah, I'm all right. Well, I've got a sort of odd sort of illnessy thing, but I don't know what it is. I think it might be just old. I think, is that an illness?
Perhaps, yeah, I think so. I think you've got a touch of old.
I think I'm clinically old.
You've only got it mildly at this stage, though, and you might get over it. If you don't have a fall.
You've got a mild case of old. I had a good time. I had friends visiting, which is nice. You know, it's always lovely to see old friends. That's really nice. Now, our wood burner. You remember when you came, you tried to get our wood burner going, and you lit a beautiful top-down fire.
I did.
And...
But it wasn't good.
Well, we sat very close to the fire and couldn't feel anything.
We did.
Yeah.
Remember it well.
So we had the wood burner man round.
All right.
And he said, well, I won't bore you with the details, but he said, look, don't ever light this fire again.
Did he? Not,
yeah. I think the person who put it in was not a wood burner man.
Okay. And, that makes sense.
I mean, notably, one of the big things is our fireplace has this big wooden beam on it. It's not an old fireplace. It's just a modern rebuild, but it's got this wooden beam on it. Well, if you look under that wooden beam, the other side, there is a lot of charring. A lot of wooden beam has not survived the wood burner fire.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's not right.
So all of which means that that is going to be incredibly expensive to replace. But there
you go. Well, that's good news.
Yes, happy days. What else? Oh, apricots.
Did you? I'm sorry. Have you seen a doctor?
Well, you know, I'm not only old. I've got apricots.
What? You actual apricots growing in your garden?
In our garden, we have a tree, and
you have many trees.
We have many trees, but we couldn't work out what this tree was. And the bloke who came to chop down the trees, because we're not chop down, but cut them back. You know, we had some tree surgery done.
Yeah,
he said. Confidently, he said, well, that's a quince. And I thought at the time, that doesn't look like a quince to me. But, you know, you take what an expert says. Turns out he wasn't much of an expert. Anyway, it's an apricot tree. And not only that, we've had fresh apricots off it.
What?
Isn't that amazing?
And you've actually eaten them?
Yeah. Edible apricots. And who knew?
I don't think I even knew that you could grow apricots that you eat in this country. I think I knew that you could grow a tree.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, well, apparently you're supposed to grow them against a wall or something like the peaches and things like that. But this isn't against a wall, it's out in the open. But I can take no credit for it because obviously we moved in earlier in the year, so we haven't done anything about this tree. But I think it's just, isn't that nice? That's a nice thing.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, so right. That's me.
Shall we move on?
Yes, let's be.
So we're going to have three bits of feedback this week. Two are long. First one's not so long. And we've bunched together these, so we've sat on them for a while. These are really about music and, you know, discovering the divine in music or sensing the divine in music, that kind of thing. So there's the common thread running through them all. And they have been amazing. So without further ado, let's go to Lisa. And she says, hello, Joe and Nick. Hope all is well. I think where we find the deepest connection to the divine / spiritual / God, etc., is when we are being the most authentic version of ourselves. For you, it's in nature. For Nick, it's a crumbly old church. For others, it will be something else. I don't think it is any... I like that. I don't think it is any coincidence that when we are doing the things that we love the most, we feel that connection. This isn't a case of spiritualizing our hobbies. They were already spiritual. It's just that in the doing of them that we are more aware of the connection between the physical and the spiritual realms. Ultimately, the divine is in everything, as you say frequently, Joe. And I think a good example of this is music, which you talked about a little too. God is present in everything from Vivaldi, Mozart and Beethoven to Guns N' Roses, Lizzo and Lord of the Lost. For where there is authenticity, there is the most obvious and deepest connections to the divine. I'm more likely to sense that connection to God at a heavy gig with thumping bass, screeching guitars and stage pyro than at a classical recital in a cathedral. But others would find that a complete turn-off. Neither one is right, as long as the authenticity is there and the music and the musicians become a conduit for those spiritual connections. She says, just my two penny worth into the conversation, still loving the podcast, of course. And she's been with us since episode one.
Gosh, well done.
Wow. You're one of the 17, Lisa.
Yeah, yeah.
Extraordinary.
One of the elect.
You are.
You'll be saved. Nobody else.
So that's great, isn't it? And I think that's right. So what about that idea? I mean, we were talking about this earlier with the Barbie film, the idea of being authentic, which is there is something about... I mean, I remember growing up feeling a bit guilty about my passions because they weren't spiritual. You know, listening to kind of Christian choruses or Cliff Richard, that's spiritual. But listening to Earth, Wind and Fire somehow wasn't spiritual, or Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
You know, it's strange. Whereas I think you're exactly right. Sometimes you listen to music, it touches you so deeply. The musicians are in a zone where they're so good at what they do. And so, I don't know what the word is. Yeah, authentic to themselves, writing about things that really matter to them or producing melodies that just are somehow transcendent. This is great.
I really like the email, and I think it is true. I think there's truth there about authenticity. I mean, authenticity is sort of this fundamental thing. I do, however, have a question about it, and it comes back to what you were saying, I think, a little earlier, you know, or it's linked with that anyway, as you were saying with the Barbie stuff, is that, well, how do we measure authenticity? You know, what is it? You know, because, you know, quite often it's like one of these phrases that is, like you were saying, you know, love yourself. And that's a phrase that, you know, you know, accept yourself and all this kind of stuff. That's a common sort of modern, almost religious phrase, you know. Be true to your authentic self is also kind of thing that you say. But actually, well, what if your authentic self is a complete...
that's an interesting point.
I think that's the thing that I have about it. I always ask, well, you know, lots of people are being true to their or what they believe to be their authentic selves. So I don't understand. I don't really know how to fix it. I don't really know where I'm going with it. It's just a question that I'm kind of throwing out. It's
two things, I think, just off the top of my head. One, original goodness, that I think there is good in all people. So, you know, don't define them as But although I do know what you mean, but also I think you're right. You can't measure yourself, but I think you can recognize when someone, you sense it when someone is being authentic. So, for example, I think when anyone is talking about something they're truly passionate about and truly interested in, you get that connection. I mean, I'm not particularly interested in, you know, I don't know, train spotting. But I know that if I was to meet a really passionate train spotter, they would somehow draw me into their interest, right? Because they're so fully aligned with their, with themselves, and they're passionate about it and they love it. And so I've been to, you know, talks and all sorts of things about areas that perhaps I'm not that interested in, but someone is so passionate about it and so alive in it. And you know, you think about presenters on TV, I'm sure. That there's something about that that draws you into it. So I think it's something that we can sense in others, perhaps easier than we can sense in ourselves.
But you could be very enthusiastic about very bad things, couldn't you? This is my point,
well,
you see.
You're right. Yeah, you can be. Yeah,
so
no,
I
definitely.
Was thinking, well, maybe, you know, I think what Lisa was trying to say was, you know, that you can encounter the divine is something that brings you joy, I think, authentic joy.
Yeah.
And that's good. And I thought, well, that's a good starting place. But maybe there's a control on it, which is, but something, and through, so something that brings you joy and through which you can bring joy to others.
That's
so in
good.
Other words,
yeah.
It's not just ever about you. So in other words, I could be authentic to myself in my sheer joy of Nazism.
Yeah.
You know, I could, but actually it wouldn't bring much joy to other people when I shared it with them. Hopefully it wouldn't anyway. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I think this is why I think the presence of God is so important, because that in a sense is a kind of control. I don't mean that in a controlling thing, but measure of what is a good thing, what is good in our authentic self.
Yeah,
Anyway, I just, it's something I've been thinking a lot about. But anyway.
That's a really interesting point. You should write a book on this, you know, because
I don't know.
I think the world knows that they should be true to themselves and they should be authentic and they should be, you know that they are loved as they are and all that stuff. I don't think people know how to do it. You could be the one that writes that book. Bestseller, I'm telling you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Barbie.
You're welcome. Okay. And then we've had this wonderful email from Adele. And I should say I'm using this with permission from Adele. So thank you for that. But also I want to just flag a warning here. If you're not in a space where you can deal with this, we are going to mention suicide in this this email. So, you know, you might want to skip over this if you're not in a place where you can handle that at the moment. But this is a truly beautiful email. Thank you so much, Adele. And she says this. Hi, Joe and Nick. Well, where to start? She says, I've emailed briefly before, loosely touching on our horrific situation, and there is so much, well, just so much. However, in an attempt to keep this brief, I would like to share just a few small thoughts in relation to what you were specifically talking about last episode, how we find God in nature and music, etc. Last year, we lost our beautiful 18-year-old son to suicide following a 2-year battle with depression. There aren't words to describe the depths of our despair, loss and heartbreak. Much has been said about bereavement on the podcast, thank you, and I've wanted to message before in relation to this topic as I have so much to say, but for today I'll try and focus on the last podcast. Music has always felt like a part of me. I have always felt music deeply. I studied it at uni and, like most others, cannot help the stirrings of emotion encouraged by well-composed film scores. Before the loss of our precious son, I always found music to be one of the main ways that I connected with God. I found this particularly so during church worship times, brackets, I know, and worship playlists that I'd listened to at home. The feeling of singing those heartfelt words with the clever chord progressions building to the bridge has in the past caused my heart to soar. Is this just feelings or is there a spiritual connection? Following our tragic loss, I have well and truly been catapulted into full-blown mid-faith crisis. Quick background, I was brought up in a Christian family and have always had a strong Christian faith for as long as I can remember. I was very happy with my theology, spoon-fed to me in my evangelical church, and have enjoyed mixing with like-minded people ever since. Since the loss of our son, to say I've struggled with my faith, church and worship music is an understatement. That sure foundation I thought had crumbled beneath my feet, and I am at sea in all areas of my faith. Trying to keep on topic, with the exception of the Song of the Chiff Chaff, she says, I now cannot bear most Christian worship songs that we sing at church. I know you understand. I loved how back in one of the earlier episodes, it was mentioned that Christians don't tell lies. We sing them. And Nick said something along the lines of, as we're singing these words, it's like we have our fingers crossed behind our backs as we're making such strong, absolute declarations of what we will or what we will not do, which we would never actually say. But because we're singing them, it's somehow different. You did say that. I remember that. So where does this leave me now with music and connecting with God? There is still this huge, heartfelt, emotional, and could it be spiritual experience I have with music, but this is now specifically with music that doesn't have lyrics. I just know that music reaches the very depths of me in a place words don't. It moves me and draws something out. The analogy falls short, but maybe a bit like a splinter easing its way out, music draws out that something that is hard to describe. I then think, why? Why would humans have this experience? Why do we have music if not for connection and to experience some kind of response? And if we have this, well, where does it come from? And my thinking leads me towards God as creator. Music is part of his creation and somehow connects to us and connects with us and through us. I'm aware this all sounds very whiffly. Joe, you probably don't mind that. I don't at all. But it is just something that goes beyond words. And isn't that a bit like faith? In the state I'm in, there are times when music draws out my tears and in doing so helps to somehow soothe the deep heartbreak that runs through to my very core. Despite my faith being in tatters and having so many unanswered questions, the beauty of music maybe echoes the beauty many see in nature, and I'm maybe learning how all this is connected, with God running all the way through it, and maybe this is the way that I connect with God, beyond words, beyond religious practices, but in the depths of my very soul where words don't reach. She says, well, sorry if this email has become a bit long. I've agonised over whether to send it or not. It was fine. Thank you for sending it, Adele. Thanks so much for all you do. And you've helped me so much at the time when my whole world has continued to fall apart. And that's with love from Adele.
Mm.
Oh, man, Adele, thank you for taking the time to write that in. And I did write to Adele and say, is it OK to share this on the podcast? And she said we could. Firstly, I mean, just so much love to you, Adele. I just can't imagine the heartbreak you're going through. So I thank you for that. But also thank you because you kept it, you know, to this whole subject of music. And there is this inexplicable, very hard to describe, transcendent connection that we can get sometimes listening to music. And how do you describe it without sounding whiffly?
Well, you know, firstly, as I just echo what Joe said, obviously our heart goes out to you. I'm humbled really by the quality and the profundity of the stuff that people send to us. I think it's remarkable. I don't think there's any coincidence that at the heart of the Bible, right in the centre of the Bible, are Psalms, and they include Psalms of lament.
Mm.
And we've talked before about the need for the church to learn songs of lament again.
Mm.
And I think this may be why Adele, one reason why Adele, you know, is completely turned off from worship songs, because they're nothing to do with lament.
Mm.
They're all to do with happiness and joy. Crazy. And that's okay. Yeah. That's okay, but, you know, they're not authentic, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. That isn't authentic when you've lost your child to suicide.
Yeah. So for those people involved in worship song leading, and a large number of them listen to the podcast, you know, that's a challenge, though, I think, to find how do we put a level of, you know, lament back into our services, not necessarily in our worship song, you know, because it's pretty much, if you want to stand up and have a time of worship, you don't necessarily then want, you know, a minor key striking up. Yeah, I just think there's something there. That's all I've got, really, in terms of saying that, the Bible understands this.
Yeah.
Lament is core in the liturgy of the ancient Israelites. So, you know, song back then was understood to be part of the mourning process, you know.
Yeah. And the phrase that really struck me is there are times when music draws out my tears. And I don't know about you, but like I've got lots of really great, what I consider to be really great upbeat playlists on Spotify and everything. But I do have my sad playlist. And a very intentionally play it, because sometimes I know there's something wrong inside me, but I actually don't know what. And sometimes listening to this music, it, you know, can allow a tear to flow, or for me to sort of get in touch with the sadness that is within me. Because, I mean, you know, we've talked about the Enneagram before. I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, which means I am an expert at avoiding painful feelings and difficult feelings and things. So one of the ways I access them is through music. And, you know, it's a great play. I'll tell you what's on the place. But if you haven't listened to Snow Patrol's What If This Is All the Love You'll Ever Get, I mean, that's just a wonderful, wonderful song. It really is, and as are all the others on there. But also, it made me think of a song by Steve Curtis Chapman. So Steve, do you know the story of Steve Curtis Chapman?
No.
He wrote this beautiful song called With Hope. And, you know, he was kind of, you know, one of those sort of classic, I think it was in the 80s, 90s, you know, just successful kind of American Christian songwriter. And his eldest son passed his driving test, and then on the first day, I think, of having passed, he took the car out and he hit, unfortunately, going out the drive, reversing out, his youngest sister, who was 5.
Mm, no.
And she died. I mean, yeah, it's just this awful, awful story. And Steve Curtis Chapman wrote this song With Hope. And you talk about being authentic, and we have talked about being authentic in this podcast, and I think it's even got some of his 5-year-old singing on it at the beginning. It's an extraordinarily authentic song. But how do you make sense of something that terrible happening to Christians? And, like, you know, like, this sort of stuff should not happen to anyone, and definitely not to God's people. You know, this is sort of, you sort of think there's some level of protection in the transaction. At least I used to think that. When I started off as a Christian, you know, I'm on the Lord's side, and, you know, we're jolly victorious people, and you sort of feel it gives you a degree of immunity from some of the suffering of life, which it doesn't. And so it forces you into this, I think, a very authentic space. And I think Adele's email was beautifully authentic. I think that Steve Curtis Chapman song, it's called With Hope, if you want to look it up, is a really authentic song. And I don't know, there's something about listening to that song that takes me I feel some sort of divine connection. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's also whiffly.
No, it's not. I think there's two things I want to say. One is, with that song, I don't think he's trying to make, well, I don't know the song, but I wouldn't have thought he's trying to make sense of that, because that's not a thing that you can easily make sense of. What he's trying to do is share the emotion, share the feeling, saying this is what I feel. Yeah. This great music does that in all manner of ways. It does it with this, I'm feeling joyful, I'm feeling uncertain, I'm feeling in love, I'm feeling out of love. It's the songwriter or the composer sharing from their heart to your heart. So there is that connection. That is what it's all about. And that as we connect together in that way, that's holy ground, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other thing that struck me from what Adele said is that the capacity of music or art to unlock something in us that actually needs unlocking, to draw the tears out.
Yeah.
And I had exactly this experience, you know, about a couple of months ago, as listeners know, I had a bit of a wobble, and it was a song that set it off. It was listening to a song.
Mm.
I just listened to the song, and it was the words of the song, and I don't need to go into the details, but, you know, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, that was the you know, those were the tears. So, but it was good. It was good. The song did me a service, because the dam needed to break, that something desperately needed to come out into the open.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, I think that's very, very powerful what music can do for us. Yeah, I haven't got anything else, because that's such a great email so profound.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, and lastly, we're going to go to Paul. Now, this is a bit long, so we're going to break it up into sections, as indeed Paul has, and talk about it as we go along. So Paul says this. Mm-hmm. He says, hi, I've just finished listening to the latest episode and found your comments on music as a holy / meeting place really interesting and definitely something that I can identify with. As a musician and someone who leads worship, whatever that means, in church, I've done a lot of thinking about this. He says, here are some thoughts. They're both hippy-dippy and wishy-washy. And so first of all, he says, all music comes from a divine source and is sacred. He said, I was brought up in a home where the view was, if it's not a hymn, it's of the devil. I've come to the conclusion that this viewpoint is complete bongos. Music is mentioned all over the Bible and was clearly a really important part of temple worship, and apparently instruments are present and used in heavenly worship too. If an actual devil exists, then all he can do is distort, not create. So music in particular, singing, brings us together. Music creates the opportunity for communal experience. You can see that at your local charismatic church or stadium or pub gig. He says, we long for togetherness, and music provides us with a way to identify with each other, sometimes without even using words.
Okay, so 2 points, the first two points he makes there. All music comes from a divine source and is sacred.
Yeah.
And music brings us together. I have no problem with the second one. All music comes from a divine source. I think it's probably true, but you can do some very undivine things with it, can't you?
Yes, exactly.
I think, once again, if we just say, well, it's sacred, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm sure we can all think of bands who have not used their music for particularly sacred means.
Yeah, sure. But the source is human, which is also divine. So I suppose...
Yeah, I think it's true. It's true, like enough, painting or like the creativity... Yeah. Well, you know, that is true in the sense that the creative spark within us comes from the creator.
Yeah, exactly.
What we do with that is perhaps what he talks about with the distortion. So, yeah, okay, good points.
So the next point is beauty points us to God. There is really no need for sounds we identify as music to create emotion in us in the same way that we find beauty in sunsets. There is no biological advantage for pleasure or enjoyment. And I think that the very fact that we do have these experiences points us to something bigger than ourselves and everyday experience. And the point after that is singing brings us closer to God. He says this is where it gets a bit hippy-dippy. And Nick may be able to correct me on this, but when I was looking, I was very surprised to find that angels do not sing. This might be a translation thing, but even at places like when angels announce the birth of Christ, certain points in Revelation, angels express praise by saying. People, on the other hand, sing all the time, as does creation in the poetic sense, and so does God. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you, in his love. He will no longer rebuke you, but rejoice over you with singing. That's from Zephaniah. I think that it's really important that singing is something that we share with the rest of the lower creation and God, but not angels. We are bound together with the divine in creative light, delight, expression and harmony. When we sing, we are practicing part of our divine nature and inheritance. St. Augustine said that he who sings prays twice. Maybe that's what he meant.
Well, interesting. I hadn't twigged this, and I have looked it up. I've done a search anyway.
Of course you have. You've asked the internet.
No, I haven't asked the internet. I have some very high-powered academic Bible software. Thank you so
much. Whatever.
And I think there are... I think it's broadly correct, but there are 2 points that might challenge the idea that angels don't sing, because there is a verse in Revelation which says, then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them singing. So every creature everywhere singing then.
Yeah.
But having said that, Revelation is a poem, you know, so it's not necessarily a description. And then there's also one of my favourite bits in Job where... God comes in at the end and he says, where were you, you know, when I laid the foundation of the earth? And he says, he goes on to say, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth, when the morning stars sang together and the heavenly beings shouted for joy, which might indicate that angels or heavenly beings was singing, although with the shouting at the same time. I think that's an interesting point. I think whatever you think about that, music is actually core to being human.
Yes, that's the basic point. Exactly.
Basic things about being... being human, and that, so I think that's absolutely correct and true. Yeah,
maybe angels just have very bad voices. Maybe they're just not good singing. I mean, maybe that's why everyone's afraid of them. So, like, you know,
Don't be afraid, Mary.
Thanks, you sound like Roy Winston.
Well, you know,
Ray Winston.
Maybe, or Roy is angelic brother. yeah. Well, maybe they just prefer rap.
Yes.
Maybe they're just, all angels are basically into hip hop and they don't do any of the singing.
Shall I move on? This is the next point. Music is healing. Here comes the wishy-washy stuff. Mike and Paul, I met with some time ago. They were the listeners who bought me breakfast, you may remember. So there you go. Yeah, he says, Mike and I have talked about this a lot, as he's into Reiki and clever science stuff. I'm told that because of quantum physics and the discoveries made, there is the teeny-weeny, itsy-bitsy stuff. I am more holes than I am physical matter, as is this magic email machine, he says. On some level, we are all connected to our surroundings and the people around us by energy. If that's true, when we add vibration in the form of sound waves into the air and us, who must then vibrate too, that must do something interesting. So that's an interesting point, isn't it? He's making the point that, you know, atoms are mostly space. You know, there's not much solid to them. He's talking about vibrations and waves. And he said this, Tom Waits said something like this, songs are just doing something pretty with the air. Because, you know, you've got those bits of equipment that can show you what sound waves do sometimes, don't they? And they make very pretty shapes.
I mean, I love Tom Waits, but sometimes he doesn't do a very pretty job of what he's doing with the air, I have to say.
No, possibly not. But there's an interesting, I mean, that is an interesting thought. Yeah. You know, we're vibrating and we're waves and sound is vibrating and sound is waves. So there's a coming together and a meeting. I think that's the point there. But he said music is healing.
Okay. Well, it's just sort of lost me really at quantum physics, to be honest.
Quantum.
It's like when you talk about it, I just turn off.
Quantum physics loses everyone, believe me. And if they don't think that, they're lying. And then he says this is his final point. He says, worship focuses us on Jesus. He says, I think that these elements come together in what we call musical worship. And I try to use them as a framework for what I do in church. I think that Nick is right. The words of good worship songs channel us into a certain state and experience because it focuses us totally on God. I see my job as saying, look at him. And then moving out the way. That's great, by the way, isn't it? Yeah, I love that phrase. He says, what I feel like happens after that is up for discussion. Ultimately, God is always doing stuff, whether we've asked him to or whether we feel it or not. I've definitely had some very intense experiences to do with music, which were a concoction of the effect of the music, my environment and the state of my emotions and spirit at that time. Someone recently was talking to me about how they had been to a U2 concert and they had seen people raising their hands and having reactions similar to ones they would have expected in church. But they believed that obviously they couldn't have been encountering Jesus. These days, I would struggle to agree with that viewpoint. I hope I haven't waffled on too much and made some kind of sense. And then he says, thanks. And that's from Paul. Thanks, Paul.
I mean, there's lots of really interesting stuff in there. I do like that phrase about worship, you know, look at him and then move out of the way.
I really love that. Yeah.
Look, music and art, it's a combination of things. Music has always been used to induce religious ecstasy. So virtually every religious tradition of the world has music and has its own equivalent of the sort of worship band in various formats.
Bongo drums, even.
Bongo drums, you know, whirling dervishes as they were, you know, all this kind of stuff. This music goes together, rhythm goes together with a kind of ecstatic state. And so, you know, I think you can't ignore almost the physiological aspect of that. And I think there is something unique to humans. I think music and song are unique to humans. Sometimes people will argue with that and say, well, you know, what about birdsong? But birdsong isn't song like we use it.
No, you know, so they communicate.
It's territorial, isn't it? You know, they're not actually writing an album.
Mm.
The blackbird in the garden is not going to do a song about Paul McCartney in return. You know, it's not.
It's a great thought.
He's saying, this is my twig, you come near, I will cut you. You know, that's what he's saying.
He's a very ghetto blackbird, your one.
He is. He's very. It's all in the hood out there, I tell you. Yeah, so there was something intrinsically human in it, intrinsically able to alter our states. And I think that's a power that can be used for good and evil, actually.
Yeah.
It can be used and abused, and it can be. Sometimes you think that people are using it for good, but actually they may be abusing it. So it's, you know, I don't think it's automatic to say that any particular state is good or bad. It's what it's being used for, really.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for writing superb emails. And we do like pithy emails, but as you can testify now, sometimes we just go with the long ones anyway. So, you know, we're sending mixed messages to listeners, aren't we, really?
Well, pith is always better, really. But actually, when you've got emails as powerful and as well thought out as what we've had this week, you know, well, pith goes out the window, really, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It does.
So anyway, we want to say a big thank you to everyone. Thanks for all the emails. Thank you for those of you that support the podcast. Thank you to everyone in Cyprus who made us your 97th favourite Christian podcast. That is just great news. And we'll be back next week, I think, won't we?
I think we will. And, you know, it's been a joy to spend time with you in that beautiful pink T-shirt.
Thank you.